Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on autism when we come back. Marriage is a state-licensed business. Marriage is a three-party limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And like any other state-licensed enterprise, it is regulated by the Welfare Department, the Department of Family Services, and your local family court. And the best part about all of this is that you have absolutely no input into or say-so over the marriage, divorce, dissolution, custody, alimony, child support, protective custody, or restraining orders. But you get to pay for all of them, and if you fail to pay, you go to jail. Now, marriage is the most important, and it's the most expensive contract that you can engage in. It is more binding, and it is more costly than your military enlistment or your 30-year home mortgage. And you probably know a whole lot less about it than you do about your military obligation or your house payments. 67% of all marriages here in America end in divorce. But whether you are a husband or a wife, you do have rights, privileges, and immunities to advance, to protect, or defend against any breach of this marriage contract. And that's why you should know and understand the terms and conditions of that marriage contract before you marry. And you should write that contract yourself instead of having the state write it for you. So whether you're married or not, why don't you write for my free general law CD package and let me share some vital information with you about the law and this marriage contract. Just call us direct. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, educational, informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. It's an easy one to remember, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Autism. Autism is becoming a scourge. Over the past 20 years or so, autism has grown in such prominence that when it affected about 1,000, that is, one person out of 1,000, one child out of 1,000, it didn't seem to be very important. It was kind of a curiosity. And then one day, it was 1 in 750, and then one day it was 1 in 500, and the incidence of autism has been growing. Until today, as I speak, it is now 1 in 150, and just a couple of years ago, it was 1 in 168. So it's continuously moving up. Now, there's got to be a cause and effect relationship here with autism and something. I don't know whether we'll be able to figure that out, but I'm going to give you some pretty serious considerations. I'm going to give you some pretty serious information that you can make your considerations or deductions from. We went on the web and we pulled out a number of articles here on autism. Now listen to some of the statistics here, facts and statistics. It now affects 1 in 150 births. That's about 1 to 1.5 million Americans. It is the fastest growing developmental disability. It has a 10 to 17% annual growth rate. And the growth comparison during the 1990s, to give you an illustration, the population in the 1990s in the United States grew by 13%. Disabilities increased by 16%. So people who developed disabilities during the decade of the 90s increased slightly more, 3 percentage points higher than the population increase. But autism, listen to this. While the population was increasing 13% in the 10 years of the 90s, autism increased by 172%. Now, if you've got a pen and paper in front of you, why don't you write that down? Because that's pretty significant. And as we progress along, we're going to see just how significant that is, because it's going to affect you whether somebody in your family has autism or not. It's going to affect your taxes. It's going to affect your schools. It's going to affect the quality of education for your children, whether you ever develop autism or any of your children develop autism. It's going to affect you. It's going to affect you very, very shortly and very, very seriously. Now, that number, again, is 172% in a 10-year period, and it is growing more rapidly. In other words, the percent of increase is going up. And nobody knows why. Well, I say nobody knows why. The people who claim to know that they should know, if anybody knows what it is, say they don't know. So it's the CDC, the National Institutes of Health, the Food and Drug Administration, the Republicans and Democrats, all the people who are supposed to know, or we would hope would know, or we think should be able to find out, they all tell us with one voice, we ain't got a clue. Now, there's another group of people over here that think they know, and they think that they've got their finger on the pulse of it, and they've been out here beating the gong and trying to convince you people that you ought to stop vaccinating your children. Of course, nobody's been listening to them, but that's what their ultimate aim is. We think you ought to stop vaccinating your children, or in lieu of that, take the thimerosal out of the vaccine. So that number again is the population increased by 13%, but autism increased by 172%. The annual cost of autism at this point in time is $90 billion a year. 90% of the costs of autism are in adult services. So it's not the little children that we're paying the bulk of the money for. It's for these little children that are now grown up and are now adults. The cost of lifelong care can be reduced by about two-thirds with early diagnosis and intervention. And in 10 years, the annual cost will be about $200 to $400 billion a year. So it's going to go up from around $100 billion to somewhere between $200 and $400 billion over the next 10 years. Now, this study was put out in 2003, so we're already 4 years into the 10-year program. And as I said, it's growing at the rate of 172% in one decade. So in this decade, it is now growing at a higher rate than 172%. Now, that's for openers. Now that we've got the openers on the table, as they say down at the Blue Room, let me tell you the answer to the riddle. Where is it coming from? It comes from the creator of the universe directly. That is, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And the reason I know that is because he told us that. Oftentimes, when a bomb goes off somewhere, somebody writes a letter, you know, and they say, well, we take responsibility for setting off that bomb. And then I remember when the Irish Republican Army, you know, was setting off bombs in England, you know, a bomb would go off and immediately there would be an announcement that the Irish Republican Army claims credit for setting off that bomb that went off and killed so many people. Now, there is a guy here in the scripture, he doesn't get any credit. He's kind of like the guy that never gets any respect. He never gets credit. But more than 3,100 years ago, he told us in a prophecy for our day today, for our time, for this set of circumstances in the world today, just before the second coming, he said, let me tell you how it's going to be. Now, the prophecy is located in Deuteronomy chapter 28, verses 59 through 62. So if you get your pen and paper out there, write it down, because I'm going to refer to this a number of times. Because oftentimes people think that it's the Republicans or the Democrats or the Food and Drug Administration or it's the Communists or it's somebody else. It's not me. It's somebody else that's causing this. And I think it would be instructive for us to look here in the scripture and find out, well, did God know about this? Is God going to stop it? Is God going to intervene? Is God going to interfere? And the answer is no. No, he's not going to interfere in the autism epidemic. He's not going to do anything about it. In fact, I'm going to go so far as to say he's the guy that caused it. He's the guy that's behind it. He's the guy that told you this is going to happen. And in order for it to happen, he has to bring it to pass. And he's bringing it to pass for a reason. For a reason. You see, you're sitting there listening now, and you say to yourself, well, I can't believe this. I'm totally innocent, and God is threatening me, and I just don't believe that. And the first error is in considering yourself to be totally innocent, because he's telling you here very plainly in Deuteronomy 28 that you're not only not innocent, you're guilty, you've violated a law, he's ticked off, and he said, this is just one punishment that I'm going to lay on you. And you're sitting there saying, yeah, but if it's me, then why are you doing it to my child? And he told you the answer to that one too, and he did that in Exodus chapter 20. He said, I am going to lay upon the children and the children's children to the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. Furthermore, he says to you, live and direct, he said, I am going to punish you, and I am going to do it face to face, eyeball to eyeball, so there's no misunderstandings. So it's something that you did that maybe you don't even know what it was. It's something that you did at some time in the past, and you might not even know when. And it's something that doesn't affect you, but it affects your children. And he told you twice, once in Deuteronomy 28, and once in Exodus 20, he said, here's what I'm going to do, and here's how I'm going to do it, and you weren't paying attention. And so it's a total surprise to most of you. So here's the prophecy in Deuteronomy 28. Here's what he said. Starting in verse 59, he said, then the Eternal will make your plagues, wonderful. And the plagues of your seed, that's your children, the plagues of your children, even great plagues, and of long continuance, and sore sicknesses, and of long continuance. Diseases that last a lifetime. Events that transpire to your seed, your children, and last of long continuance over a long period of time. Diseases like autism and Jacob's Creutzfeldt, Parkinson's, muscular dystrophy, multiple sclerosis. And moreover, he will bring upon you all the diseases of Egypt which you were afraid of, and they shall cleave unto you. Diseases like heart attack and stroke and cancer, contagious diseases, degenerative diseases, diseases of all sorts and of all stripes, diseases that struck the Egyptians when we were in national captivity in Egypt, diseases that today are replicates of those diseases in Egypt, diseases that we can now identify, like diabetes and stroke and heart disease, that when we do autopsies on these cadavers, these mummies from Egypt, and we see, my God, these people had diseases just like we do today. In verse 61, he says, also every sickness and every plague which is not written in the book of this law, them will the Eternal bring upon you until you be destroyed. Notice the term, until you be destroyed. The purpose behind autism, cancer, heart attack, stroke, Parkinson's, muscular dystrophy, multiple sclerosis, Alzheimer's disease, is to destroy the nation. And notice that the CDC, in this case it's the ASA, the Voice of Autism, in their article, it's the Autism Society of America, and if you'd like a copy of the report, it's www.autism-society.org. Once more, that's www.autism-society.org. That's just one page out of many pages of bad news. Now let's take a look at page two. What is autism? Well, autism is a complex neurobiological disorder that typically lasts throughout a person's lifetime. It is part of a group of disorders known as autism spectrum disorders, called ASD. Today, one in 150 individuals is diagnosed with autism, making it more common than pediatric cancer, diabetes, and AIDS combined. It occurs in all racial, ethnic, and social groups, and it is four times more likely to strike boys than girls. Now, I'm going to pause here. I'm going to pause. Hang on a second. It occurs in all racial groups, so it isn't something that's endemic among blacks or Asians or whites or anybody else. So it's in all racial groups, ethnic groups. It doesn't occur just to Irishmen or Italians or Englishmen. It occurs in all ethnic and social groups. It occurs among Jehovah's Witnesses or Seventh-day Adventists or Mormons or Baptists or Jews. So it is four times more likely to strike boys than girls, so it's more prevalent in males than females. What is the common denominator? I'm going to come back to that. What is it that all of these ethnic, racial, and social groups do that causes this autism? You see, when we take a look at the Mormons, we observe them and we see they live longer than the general population, and that they have fewer diseases than the general population. So we look at them and we say, well, what is it that this social group does differently than all the rest of us in society? They don't drink, they don't smoke, they don't drink coffee, they're not infected with caffeine. And there's one other thing, there's four things there, I forgot the fourth. Well, they don't drink soda pop, Coca-Cola. And they're not affected with diabetes as much as the rest. It doesn't mean that they don't have any, but it doesn't mean that there aren't any Mormons that don't drink Coca-Cola. But if you take a look at the entire group, all 12 million of them, and you ask, well, why do they live to be 80 and the rest of us live to be 75? And why is it that the rest of us have a higher incidence of diabetes than the Mormons? And the answer is, they do something different than we do. They eat differently than we do. They're not debilitated by alcohol, caffeine, nicotine, and white sugar to the degree that the rest of us are. So it shows up in that vital statistic. Now, whatever it is with AIDS, or excuse me, not AIDS, but autism, whatever it is about this autism, it affects the Mormons the same as it does everybody else. So there's something that the Mormons are doing, just like all the rest of us are doing, to create this autism problem. Now, autism was first identified in 1943 by Dr. Leo Kanner of Johns Hopkins Hospital. Now, I'm going to underline that for you. That's 1943. Something happened here, because prior to 1943, we didn't have autism. Prior to 1943, we didn't have autism. We didn't know what it was. It had never been laid upon us before. But there is something that we're doing now since sometime shortly before 1943, because whatever this event was that occurred before 1943, because in 1943, Dr. Leo Kanner of Johns Hopkins Hospital first identified this syndrome. And at the same time, a German scientist, Dr. Hans Asperger, described a milder form of the disorder that is now known as Asperger syndrome. All right, pause. About this time during World War II, a German scientist observes the same thing happening in Germany that is happening here in the United States. Ah, what is it that the people of Germany are doing, and what is it that the people of the United States are doing that is similar in nature that would cause this same symptom? And going on, these two disorders are listed in the DSM-4, that is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, as two of the five developmental disorders that fall under the autism spectrum disorders. The others are Rett syndrome, PDD, NOS, pervasive developmental disorder, and childhood degenerative or disintegrative disorder. All of these disorders are characterized by varying degrees of impairment in communication skills and social abilities, and also by repetitive behaviors. For more discussion on the range of diagnoses that comprise autism spectrum disorder, click here. Now, what have I got? I don't know how to tell you how to click here because I don't know where this came from, but it could possibly be from ASA, the Voice of Autism, where it says, what is autism, an overview? It doesn't have the web page down here at the bottom of the page, but it says click here, so my guess would be that it's probably from the ASA. Now, autism spectrum disorders can usually be reliably diagnosed by about age 3. And although new research is pushing back the age of diagnosis to as early as 6 months. Something is happening here between age 6 months and age 3. Something is occurring to this child prior to age 6 months. What is it? What is it that the people of Germany do and the people of America do? What is it that the Mormons do and the Baptists do? It's something that's common to all of them. Because when we take a look at ethnic and racial groups and we divide them out, such as Jews, for instance, let's just take an example. Jews. Jews almost universally practice circumcision. So as an ethnic group or as a racial group, we can look at these Jewish people and we can say, okay, all of those people practice circumcision. It's practically universal. The incidence of penile cancer among Jewish men is unheard of. In fact, in the 20th century, I think there were 3 reported cases of penile cancer among Jewish men. 3 cases. They were so rare, they were reported in the medical journals. Hey, come over here. Look at this. Here's a Jew with penile cancer. The third time it's happened in the 20th century. In China, the people in China do not practice circumcision at all. The people of China practice circumcision so rarely that for practical purposes, we could compare the Jews and the Chinese and we could say all Jews are circumcised and all Chinese are uncircumcised. That's how rare it is in China. You could say that none of them are circumcised. And the incidence of penile cancer in China is 14%. Now, that's not 14% of the whole population. That's 14% of the people in China who contract cancer will contract penile cancer. Now, we could ask this question. Now, of the Chinese people who are circumcised, what is the proportion? What is the rate among those people after they've been circumcised that develop penile cancer? And the answer is, it is so rare that it's non-existent. Can we draw a conclusion then from this observation? People who are circumcised are less likely to get penile cancer. In fact, when we take a look at people that are circumcised versus uncircumcised worldwide, regardless of their racial or their ethnic or their social groupings, we find the same results that we find with the Jews. Now, you know, common sense would say to you that if you wanted to avoid penile cancer, that you should be circumcised. Now, it happens that circumcision is a biblical doctrine. Circumcision came about, and it's the first time it's mentioned here is in the Bible, when Abraham is circumcised somewhere around 1950 B.C. So it's been around for around 4,000 years. And the people who are circumcised don't come down with penile cancer. It doesn't mean they don't come down with cervical cancer or breast cancer or something else or, you know, some other form of cancer. But it does show that they don't come down with penile cancer. Now, whatever this autism is shared by whatever it is that the people who are developing, or the social, ethnic, or racial groups that develop autism, whatever they're doing, they share commonly. If we could figure out what these people are doing, you know, maybe we could do something about it. Now, we can take a look at the Chinese. They don't practice circumcision. They have the highest rate of penile cancer on the planet. Okay. And then when we circumcise Chinese people and we take a look at just that group, you know, many Chinese are Christians and many Christians practice circumcision. So you can take Chinese, you know, take 1,000, 5,000 Chinese that are circumcised, then take a look at their medical history and say, well, how many of them develop penile cancer? It's about as rare as a Jew. Not everybody in the world gets autism. There are groups of people around the world that are not developing autism. But it's not in the United States of America. So whatever it is here in the United States of America, it is something that we are doing here in this country that is common among Mormons, common among Baptists. It's common among Republicans and Democrats. It is something that is common among blacks and whites and reds. It's something that we do in this country that isn't done in some other countries that don't have it. So what do you think that might be? Now, the autism spectrum disorders can usually be reliably diagnosed by age 3. If you can diagnose whatever it is that we're doing by age 3, we are doing it to our children. Our children are not doing this to themselves. It is something that we adults are doing to our children, and we're doing it before they're age 3, and although new research is pushing back the age of diagnosis to as early as 6 months, there's something that we're doing to our children before they're 6 months old. It may be in the womb. It may be that our mothers are drinking alcoholic beverages and distorting their genes, or men are alcoholics, or, but you know, that has been explored, and we find that it happens just as prevalently among the Mormons as anybody else, and they don't drink. So what is it? It's something that's got to be common to all of these racial, ethnic, and social groups. And it's something that we're doing as early as or earlier than 6 months of age. Parents are usually the first to notice unusual behaviors in their child or their child's failure to reach appropriate developmental milestones. Some parents describe a child that seemed different from birth, while others describe a child who was developing normally and then lost skills. Pediatricians may initially dismiss signs of autism, thinking a child will catch up, and may advise parents to wait and see. New research shows that when parents suspect something is wrong with their child, they are usually correct. If you suspect there's something wrong, you're probably right. And if you have concerns about your child's development, don't wait. Speak to your pediatrician about getting your child screened for autism immediately. If your child is diagnosed with autism, early intervention is critical to gain maximum benefit from existing therapies. And although parents may have concerns about labeling a toddler as autistic, the earlier this diagnosis is made, the earlier interventions can begin. Currently, there are no effective means to prevent autism. I'm going to take exception to that. Currently, there are effective means to prevent autism, and before we finish, we're going to tell you what it is. No fully effective treatments and no cure. So here are the experts. They say that currently there is no effective means to prevent it, there is no fully effective treatments, and there is no cure. That's not true. We can prevent it, and we can treat it, and we can cure it. Research indicates, however, that early intervention in an appropriate educational setting for at least 2 years during the preschool years can result in significant improvements for many young children with autism spectrum disorders. As soon as autism is diagnosed, early intervention instruction should begin. Effective programs focus on developing communication, social, and cognitive skills. And that makes a lot of sense if you stop and think about it. Because let's take a child, you know, that's blind. You know, you go to work with that child that's blind, and that child grows up, and he doesn't notice that he's blind. He can do just about everything that he knows that he can do. I mean, he can't drive a car, but then he doesn't know he can't drive a car. He's never driven a car, so he doesn't miss it. If you've been driving a car and then you go blind, you'll miss it. But the guy that never drove a car, he doesn't have a problem with it. And he develops his other skills to a higher sensitivity. In other words, a blind person has a more acute sense of hearing, a more acute sense of taste, a better sense of feel. I tried running my fingers over some Braille one time and I couldn't tell anything. People who have, who are blind, you know, who have that disability, they can run their fingers over Braille and they can read books. I ran my fingers over the Braille and I couldn't tell anything. I could tell there were some raised spaces there. I could feel the red, but it didn't mean anything. And not only didn't it mean anything, I couldn't tell the difference from one to the next. So these developmental, you know, if your child has autism, the sooner he gets diagnosed with it and the sooner you get after it, the better you can deal with it. That everybody is in agreement to that. What I want to raise to your attention is, why do you want your child to get autism? Why do you want your child to be disabled in the first place? Because there's something that you're doing that causes autism. But it's something that we do that does not cause autism in every single case. You can do it to 150 people, and one of the 150 will develop autism. So it's something that is pervasive, something that we all do, but it's something that doesn't cause autism in every case, but it is getting worse and worse. It's growing and growing. So it had a mild beginning, so whatever it was that we were doing, we didn't do as rapaciously as we're doing it today. And they expect it to become worse and worse in the future, so it's something that we're doing today that we expect to do a whole lot more of in the future. Because it's going to get worse. I got to ask the question, well, whatever it is that we're doing today that caused the autism, are you really sure you want to do more of it in the future? Don't you think you should do less and less of it in the future in order to eliminate autism? Don't you think that we'd be better served if we prevented autism rather than treat it or deal with it after the fact? There's just something about my common sense that says, I think I'd just soon avoid that autism if it's at all possible. And whatever it is the rest of you people are doing that makes it so common and so prevalent is something that George Gordon wants to avoid, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Now, I succeeded in raising, my wife and I together, we succeeded in raising 12 children. 12. And not a single one of those children were ever vaccinated. And not a single one of them developed autism. And in places where we don't vaccinate, we don't have autism. Are you starting to get the drift? Vaccination. That's the least common denominator, boys and girls. Vaccinations with vaccines that were laced with thimerosal began in 1935. And we gave our children two or three or four vaccinations between 1935 and 1943, and autism began to be noticed. It just took 8 years from the introduction of thimerosal in the vaccines for autism to raise its ugly head. Today, your child receives 35 vaccines between age 2 months and 5 years. Hundreds of times more mercury is introduced into your child in that first 5 years than is recommended as being helpful by the government agencies. All of the government agencies tell you plainly that mercury is a deadly, neurologic, toxic poison. You put it in your vaccines, and the thing that's the least common denominator among all of the racial, ethnic, and social groups is that all of them vaccinate their children. all of them, all of the time. All right, I got to give you a reminder here that we are the Law Hour and Editorial Review. You're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and we recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Now, the plague of autism, as I pointed out at the opening of this series, is caused by God Himself. God Himself said, "I'm going to send upon you diseases and plagues that you have never heard of. You don't even have a name for. Diseases and plagues that I didn't even hear of when I was a child. Diseases and plagues that have names, but the names, you know, of these diseases and plagues have been developed over the last 50 or 75 years. These are the diseases, you know, like Alzheimer's disease. Now, we didn't hear about Alzheimer's disease until the 1970s. Autism. First time anybody thunk up that name was back in 1943. And what about Lou Gehrig's disease? You know, until Lou Gehrig, you know, came down with it. He was a famous baseball star and hero of the New York Yankees back in the 1930s. You know, until Lou Gehrig came up with this disorder that we call the Lou Gehrig's disease, we didn't know about ALS. You know, we got a label for it today. Now, the God of Abraham said that He was going to lay upon us these diseases. So, you know, there's a guy to blame for this. It's probably not your God. I'm reporting about a different God. I'm not reporting, you know, about Allah or Buddha or Shinto or Jesus or somebody else. Now, I'm reporting about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. This is a report concerning the God of Moses. The God that gave Moses this information about 1329 B.C. out at Mount Sinai. And He said, here's what I'm going to do. this prophecy wasn't even written for Moses. It wasn't written for the Israelites of that day. It was written for the end times. It was written for the people of the United States of America, Canada, Australia, Western Europe, New Zealand. It was written for the people of the world today, before the second coming. The prophecy contained in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26, this is the penal clause. This is the chapter that deals with the violation of the contract terms. We Americans and Western Europeans have a contract, and that contract was negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai. We have fallen into a violation of, a breach of. We are no longer performing on the terms and conditions of a contract. And the penal clause in the contract is varied, but it has a specific penal clause called disease. It's not the only penal. It's not the only problem, but it is one of many penalties that we are going to pay as a nation, as individuals. And sometimes it affects people that we consider to be totally innocent. You know, like little babies, 6 months old, who develop autism. A god-awful, hard, debilitating disease that is going to take $200 to $400 billion. This will bankrupt the nation. It will bankrupt your health care system. You can sit here and talk about the election of Ought 8, and you can talk about national health care insurance. Boys and girls, you ain't got enough money to take care of all the people that are coming down with developmental diseases, cancer, heart attack, stroke. The entire nation is sick from the head to the foot. 80% of us are on drugs, and those of us that are over 65 are on 6 prescription drugs. And then we have an epidemic of illegal drug use. America is a nation of drug addicts. And as a result of that, we have some bad, bad, bad diseases. And they're getting worse. It's bad and it's getting worse. As evidenced by this one statistic, let me repeat this one again. In the 1990s, developmental diseases increased by 16%, while the population as a whole increased by 13%. Well, that's a 3% increase in developmental diseases. Now, that means that every 25 years, if we just take 3%, take the rule of 72, and divide that by 3, comes up to 24. So every 24 years, the number of people with developmental diseases will double every 24 years with a 3% increase. Boys and girls, it may well be true that 24 years it'll double, and then in the next 24 years it'll double, and you can say, well, in 48 years I'll be dead and buried, but then you know there's 24 years after that, and 24 years after that, and 24 years after that, and 24. That's about every quarter of a century. That means it's going to double in 25 years, and then it's going to double over that number in the next 25 years, and then it's going to double over that number, and it's growing geometrically, boys and girls, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. Geometric progression will involve all of us at some point in the future. Everybody in America will develop a developmental disease just based upon these statistics, unless it's stopped or reversed. Now, it isn't being stopped and reversed, and the one disability called autism is increasing at the rate of 172%. 172%. Boys and girls, that's 172% in 10 years. That's 17.2% a year. That means that if we take 72 and divide that by 17.2, it doubles every 4.1 years. So if the incidence of autism doubles every 4 years, that means that 4 years from now we'll have twice as many people. 4 years from that we'll have four times as many people. 4 years from that we'll have eight times as many people with autism. Can you see where this is leading? Everybody in the nation is going to have autism or develop autism in probably 30 or 40 years. I didn't work out the arithmetic here, but you can. Just keep doubling it until you get to $300 million. Now, it's pretty obvious that that isn't going to happen. I mean, long before that occurs, the nation is going to be destroyed. Hell, we'll be a national captivity. We'll cease to exist. We'll cease to function. Kind of like the old Soviet Union. Now, here's another part of the story here. Autism. National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke. Autism, which is sometimes called classical autism, is the most common condition in a group of developmental disorders known as the autism spectrum disorders. Autism is characterized by impaired social interaction problems with verbal and nonverbal communication and an unusual, repetitive, or severely limited activities and interests. Other ASDs include Asperger syndrome, Rett syndrome, childhood disintegrative disorder, and pervasive developmental disorder, not otherwise specified, usually referred to as PDD or NOS. And experts estimate that 3 to 6 children out of every 1,000 will have autism. Males are 4 times more likely to have autism than females. So what are the common signs of autism? Okay, common signs. There are 3 distinctive behaviors that characterize this autism. Autistic children have difficulties with social interaction, problems with verbal and nonverbal communication, and repetitive behaviors or narrow obsessive interests. These behaviors can range in impact from mild to disabling. The hallmark feature of autism is impaired social interaction. Parents are usually the first to notice symptoms of autism in their child. As early as infancy, a baby with autism may be unresponsive to people or focus intently on one item to the exclusion of others for long periods of time. And a child with autism may appear to develop normally and then withdraw and become indifferent to social engagement. Children with autism may fail to respond to their name and often avoid eye contact with other people. They have difficulty interpreting what others are thinking or feeling because they can't understand social cues, such as tone of voice or facial expressions. And they don't watch other people's faces for clues about appropriate behavior. They lack empathy. Many children with autism engage in repetitive movements such as rocking and twirling, or in self-abusive behavior such as biting or head banging. They also tend to start speaking later than other children, or they may refer to themselves by name instead of I or me. And children with autism don't know how to play interactively with other children. And some speak in a sing-song voice about a narrow range of favorite topics with little regard for the interests of the person to whom they are speaking. Many children with autism have a reduced sensitivity to pain, but are abnormally sensitive to sound, touch, or other sensory stimulation. These unusual reactions may contribute to behavioral symptoms such as a resistance to being cuddled or hugged. Children with autism appear to have a higher than normal risk for certain coexisting conditions, including fragile X syndrome, which causes mental retardation, tuberous sclerosis, in which tumors grow on the brain, epileptic seizures, Tourette syndrome, learning disabilities, and attention deficit disorder. For reasons that are still unclear, about 20-30% of children with autism develop epilepsy by the time they reach adulthood. And while people with schizophrenia may show some autistic-like behavior, their symptoms usually do not appear until the late teens or early adulthood. Most people with schizophrenia also have hallucinations and delusions, which are not found in autism. So we have a range of mental disorders. And one of the comments made was that autism sometimes appears in people, rarely, but sometimes appears in people that are not vaccinated. Well, did anybody ever ask the question, well, what about the parents? Were they vaccinated? And was it passed on to the next generation? Because one of the areas that is being explored is genetic. So we take soldiers and send them off to Iraq. We then expose these soldiers to depleted uranium. Then we bring these soldiers back, and they father children with birth defects. Children, are we able to put two and two together? You know, oftentimes people have mental retardation, but it's very mild. Has anybody ever asked, what caused the mental retardation in that person, even though it's a mild form of mental retardation? You know, they're just not the sharpest marble in the drawer. And, you know, if you take a look and you ask yourselves, gee, could it be that we have developed a rebellion toward our Creator? And that in our rebellion against our Creator, we have adopted a lifestyle, a series of interacting actions and events in our lifestyle, in our society, that is causing not just autism, but a whole host and plethora of diseases. I just thought I'd throw it out for your consideration, because I didn't write this. Not a word. I'm a reporter. I just reported what I saw here in Deuteronomy 28, and I applied it to what I'm reading here in my report concerning autism. I'm just asking some questions, raising the issue and asking you, well, have you considered that? Has it entered your mind? Because in most people's cases, most people that I talk to never even entered their consciousness. That it's something that we're all doing, something that we all do, regardless of our ethnic, racial, or social backgrounds. It affects our children from starting, you know, we start these vaccinations at age 2 months. We have thimerosal in the vaccines. And we're giving our children more and more of these shots every year. Now, when I was a child, I didn't receive any vaccines, but they were giving them out. And then I think that you got about three or four. Now, there was autism back in the 1940s, but it was very, very rare. You know, you got three or four vaccines. Could it be that the three or four vaccines given to the children back in the 1940s, starting in the 30s and in the 40s and then in the 50s, and then as we keep increasing these vaccines, I mean, we're now giving our children 35 of these vaccines. They expect that there will be 50 shots over the next 20 years. This is by the year 2020. I saw a number the other day. They expect that the vaccine regimen by the year 2020 will include 50 shots. Boys and girls, I would suggest to you that perhaps we're headed in the wrong direction. If autism is in fact connected with thimerosal, and I'm just saying, well, if in fact it is, because all of the experts say, no, it isn't. No, it isn't. But I'm sitting here saying, well, okay, maybe it isn't. I've got a report here. I'll give it to you next time. We'll talk about the symptoms that come from this vaccine. The symptoms that occur from mercury poison and the symptoms that come from the vaccine. That is, the mercury in the vaccines. And they're identical. There's about 50 of these symptoms. And I would say that if you develop 50 symptoms from mercury toxicity, and then you start shooting people up. Now, they're not exposed to mercury in any accidental form, but you deliberately expose them to mercury by vaccine, and they develop these same toxic symptoms. I would say, looks like to me there's a connecting link. Now, I'm not an expert, and I'm not a doctor, you know, and I'm a high school dropout, but I'm not brain dead. I'm not brain dead yet. Seems like to me, maybe it would be a place for us to concentrate our research. Maybe some of you real smart people out there with letters after your names and a lot of money from the government ought to sit down and say, gee, let's investigate this and see. Let's take a group of people from Nepal who aren't vaccinated, who have never been vaccinated. And let's take a look at the incidence of autism in Nepal and Tibet, where nobody gets vaccinated. And let's compare that group of people with the people in New York City. Blacks, whites, religious, non-religious, everybody in New York City. And then ask the question, what's the difference between the people of Tibet and Nepal and the people of New York City? What's the common denominator between the people of New York, Los Angeles, and Philadelphia, who all have the same rates of autism? You know, kids, I don't think you have to be a genius to put this story together. And if I'm the only guy in the country that can put this story together, it may be that I'm a genius, but I never thought of myself as being a genius. I was in Mrs. Wild's third grade class, and I can only remember one week, one time, out of the entire third grade school year, that I triumphed in one academic lesson, one academic endeavor. That was spelling. I was the spelling champion of Mrs. Wild's third grade class of 1947. One time. And based upon that rude experience, I have never thought of myself as being intellectually overachieving. In fact, my wife said, you know, your spelling sucks. Now, I write a lot. And I spell a lot of words, but it all has to be reviewed. It gets reviewed here at the school. So when you see our webpage, you can rest assured that I didn't spell that. You can rest assured I didn't write it. Now, I wrote out what went on there, but somebody else came along and they fixed that. I don't think that we're dealing with intellectual superiority here. I think we're just dealing with reason, logic, and common sense. And the information that's out there, shucks, kids, I'm not telling you anything that's not on the web. I didn't get this from the National Institute of Health. I didn't get this from the CIA or the FBI or from some secret organization, you know, like the KGB. And they said, hey, listen, we've got this secret information and nobody else has it. It's out there for everybody. It's out there for everybody. And it's something that everybody does and everybody believes in and everybody practices. And it's got a very debilitating result. And the creator of the universe told you 3,100 years ago, this is going to be the results of your rebellion against me. Go ahead, rebel if you want to. But there's a cause and effect relationship that comes from it. So there's the opening salvo, program one. And the story is autism. We'll be back tomorrow with more on autism. But let me remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our webpage at georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling site on our webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, our time is up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.